We've forgotten what plagues actually look like. Today, we complain about social media addiction or Netflix binges with casual humor. But real plagues meant waking up covered in sores, watching neighbors die in the streets, and wondering if you'd be next. We're living through an unprecedented stretch of medical fortune, nearly three decades without a major disease decimating the developed world. But history whispers a warning. This luck won't hold forever. What matters most when disease strikes isn't just the pathogen itself, but how ordinary people respond. Do we turn on each other, or do we stand together? The answer has determined which civilizations survived and which crumbled into dust. Rome didn't collapse from moral decay, it fell to disease. The Antonine Plague of 165 CE killed 10 to 18 million people. Germanic tribes with wooden shields suddenly defeated Rome's armored legions. Terrified citizens bought charms and blamed Christians, launching brutal persecutions. By 410 CE, the city that once housed over a million was sacked repeatedly until only hundreds remained. Disease attacks minds, too. In Strasbourg, July 1518, after years of famine and plague, Frau Trofea began dancing in the street. For 3 days, she danced until blood soaked her shoes. Dozens joined, not celebrating, but entranced, experiencing terrifying visions, dancing until they collapsed. Their feet bled until bones showed through. Modern medicine calls this mass psychogenic illness, unbearable emotional pain transformed into physical symptoms. Strasbourg's bizarre response? Providing music and dance floors. When 15 died daily, officials reversed course, banning dancing. The cure came through pilgrimages to St. Vitus's shrine, where priests performed mass and gave dancers crosses and red shoes marked with holy oil. Mass hysteria persists. Cambodian survivors of the Khmer Rouge developed hysterical blindness. In 1962, a laughing epidemic struck a Tanzanian school. In 2012, teenage girls in Leroy, New York, experienced simultaneous tics. Civilizations end when plague strikes and society fractures under fear's weight.
Smallpox didn't just weaken civilizations, it erased them. The Aztec and Incan empires essentially ceased to exist within a year of exposure. When Spanish friars threatened a Cuban native with hell, he replied he'd rather be with the devils in hell than with Spaniards in heaven. Yet smallpox proved more devastating than any Spanish weapon. The disease killed Emperor Huayna Capac in 1527, triggering succession crises and civil war. Pizarro admitted that had Huayna Capac lived, we could not have won, for he was greatly loved by his people. Approximately 90% of Native Americans died, with cities like Texcoco reduced to just 4% of their population. Indigenous Americans had no exposure to diseases from domesticated animals, while Europeans had developed partial immunity over generations. The practice of variolation, deliberately infecting people with mild smallpox, originated in the Ottoman Empire. Edward Jenner's breakthrough came when he noted milkmaids' immunity after contracting cowpox, leading to the first successful vaccination in 1796. This discovery became the foundation for modern vaccines and eventually eradicated smallpox entirely. 19th century society romanticized tuberculosis as a beautiful death. Literature portrayed angelic women dying peacefully while looking radiant. Edgar Allan Poe called it glorious. Verdi's opera featured a dying woman hitting a high B-flat note, impossible with compromised lungs. Reality was different. John Keats' friend Joseph Severn revealed the horror. 5 times the blood has come up in coughing. The torture he suffers all and every night is dreadful in the extreme. By the late 18th century, healthy women used whitening powder to achieve the pale, sickly look. This glamorization led to tragedies like Lizzie Siddle, the Pre-Raphaelite model who suffered from anorexia and opiate addiction before dying of laudanum overdose at 32. Mary Mallon earned $45 monthly cooking for wealthy families, unknowingly carrying typhoid bacteria. As an asymptomatic carrier, she infected people everywhere she worked, causing 22 cases and multiple deaths. When investigators requested specimens, Mary, perfectly healthy and unfamiliar with asymptomatic carriers, chased one with a carving fork. She was imprisoned on North Brother Island for 3 years. In 1909, the New York American dubbed her Typhoid Mary, noting she was imprisoned despite committing no crime. Released in 1910 without hygiene training, she resumed cooking under the pseudonym Mrs. Brown. By 1915, working at Sloan Maternity Hospital, typhoid broke out again. Mary was quarantined for life while other asymptomatic carriers received lenient treatment. After her death at 70, Dr. Baker wrote, "Mary had been of great service to humanity, though the price was her freedom." Mother Teresa observed that feeling unwanted is worse than diseases like leprosy. The ideal response would be communities rallying around the afflicted, but such compassion almost never happens. Instead, individuals like Father Damien emerge as beacons of humanity. Born Joseph de Vester in Belgium in 1840, this mischievous youth became a priest and took his sick brother's place on a missionary assignment to Hawaii. Hawaii's 1865 Act to Prevent the Spread of Leprosy forcibly quarantined sufferers on Molokai Island, which became a lawless hellhole. Damien immediately disobeyed the bishop's instructions, accepting fruit from lepers and visiting their homes. Finding a young girl covered in worms, he began changing bandages by hand, knowing he risked infection. He transformed the chapel of St. Philomena into a community center, organized funerals, formed a choir where members with missing fingers adapted instruments together, and built farming infrastructure. In 1884, Damien discovered his own leprosy when spilled tea on his foot caused no pain. He continued working until his death in 1889 at age 49. Damien proved that compassion can overcome even the fear of death. Polio's defeat shows humanity's power when united. During the 1940s, polio struck without warning, killing some and confining others to wheelchairs. By 1952, Americans feared it second only to atomic bombs. President Franklin Roosevelt, paralyzed by polio at 39, transformed survivor perception. His birthday balls, beginning in 1934, carried the slogan, "We dance so that others might walk." By 1938, his National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis attracted donations from two-thirds of Americans and enlisted 7 million volunteers. Jonas Salk, funded by the foundation, developed a killed virus vaccine by 1947. In 1954, American parents volunteered 1.8 million children for nationwide trials. Five pharmaceutical companies produced it nonprofit. When asked about patenting, Salk replied, "Could you patent the sun?" sacrificing $2.5 to $7 billion in potential earnings. President Eisenhower implemented free vaccination for children. This wasn't just individual protection, it was herd immunity, ensuring enough vaccinations prevent outbreaks entirely. Today, polio is nearly eradicated, proving what humanity achieves when we fight disease together. History shows diseases are defeated through collective action, not just science. The AIDS crisis exemplifies this. The Reagan administration waited until 1987 to address it publicly, after 21,000 Americans had died. Yet, progress like polio's near eradication offers hope. One day, we'll recognize diseases as enemies of all humanity, not just of perceived sinners or outsiders. When we fight plagues instead of each other, we don't just defeat diseases, we preserve our humanity.